The Line of Fire is not just another radio broadcast. It is the voice of a worldwide gospel movement. You're about to hear from our missionaries from around the world.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, a little over 1 week ago, I was broadcasting live from Jerusalem, and that gave you somewhat of a feel of the fact that we're not just on the radio, we're out on the front lines of Jewish ministry, we're out in the nations, but there's been something I have been looking forward to for many months now, and I thought, boy, this is going to be great. We're in Jerusalem 1 week, we come back, and then we have a special missions week here on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. I won't be taking a lot of calls the next few days, but some will be very strategic. So keep the number handy, 866-348-7884, or you can post your comments at askdrbrown.org and click on the Line of Fire. Friends, we do not simply exist to be a voice on the radio, however valuable that may be. As you know, my heart literally burns to see Jesus exalted around America and around the world. We burn for the nations to hear the gospel. We burn for the nations to bow the knee to King Jesus. We exist on a very simple level, to be disciples and to make disciples, to know God and to make God known. That's who we are. That's what our heartbeat is. And we've had a school of ministry. I've been involved in teaching in school since 1982. But we birthed our school in 1997 in Pensacola. It continues without interruption here in Concord, North Carolina, now in 2012. And we have grads serving as missionaries around the world. And we support grads as missionaries around the world. Oh, I don't just mean short-term trips. I mean some that have been out on the field for 10, 12 years now with their families, others that serve sacrificially in different parts of the world, very difficult parts of the world for several years. And yes, we have had one of our missionaries martyred for the gospel this year. We haven't spoken about it much because of the sensitive place that he and his team were ministering, and some are still ministering there, so we don't talk about it much. But friends, we're absolutely serious about this. And this broadcast, this radio broadcast, serves as the hub for everything we do, for world missions, for our school, for Jewish ministry, all part of the vision of Jesus' revolution, Jesus changing us, and we go and change the world. Today, friends, in the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking to missionaries who served in Morocco, who are currently serving in Mexico, in Iraq, other nations, parts of America. And we'll be talking to different missionaries. See, once a year we have a missions conference. This is our 13th annual missions conference. We do it once a year. And many of our missionaries are able to come in from different parts of the world, and they share what's happening. And sometimes we just sit, we're stunned, we shout, we cry, because we're amazed to hear how God is working through them and what he's doing in them. And we were able to arrange it. It's so hard because their schedules are tight and they're traveling in and out and they're raising support. We were able to arrange it to get some of our choice workers from on the field. And when we come back, I'm going to start talking with Tim Austin. Tim is a grad from our School of Ministry in 2001. He served for a number of years with his family in the nation of Morocco. He's going to be talking about how to witness to Muslims. Recently, he saw an extraordinary move of God in Sierra Leone with store. If I didn't hear it from a trustworthy grad and coworker, I would question it. But knowing him well, I know these things are real. And he's not just preaching to the Muslims. He's ministering here in the streets of New York. So put your seatbelts on. You're about to be enriched. Who knows? God might just be tapping you on the shoulder and saying, go, I'm sending you.
want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, this is, for us, radio history on the Line of Fire, our first ever Missions Emphasis Week, where we are interviewing one after another some of our workers serving God around the world, in America, in the nations, making a difference for Jesus, all grads from our ministry school. If you have a question about witnessing to Muslims, we might be able to get to some calls. So 866-34-TRUTH, number to call. My guest now, Tim Austin, who served in Morocco. Tim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's good to be here.
What year did you go to Morocco?
My first trip to Morocco was in 2001.
2001. All right. And then when did you relocate with your family?
Relocated it with my family in 2003.
2003. And any kids? When we say family, how many kids were involved?
At the time, three. We had the fourth one there.
Okay. So you went over with a good-sized family. Did you know Arabic at that point?
Knew no Arabic.
Knew Arabic. And how in the world did you end up in Morocco, which is a Muslim nation?
Well, when I came to the School of Ministry, the very first missions conference that we had, the focus of the conference was on Islam. And I started hearing things like there's parts of the world where you have one full-time Christian worker for every million people.
Mm-hmm.
And my thoughts up to that time were, you know, to go into ministry, be a youth pastor or a pastor of a church here in America. And once I started hearing
the
that...
The Christian American dream.
Exactly. And once I started hearing that, the Lord prompted my heart and said, I don't need you here. He said, I need you where there's one full-time Christian worker for every million people.
God. And that's fairly common in the Muslim world, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. So Morocco, what's it like? Paint a picture for me.
Well, it's about the size of the state of California. You have about 33 million people. Out of 33 million, there are probably between 2,000 and 3,000 believers there today. So you could, in a good-sized American church, you could fit every Moroccan believer in the whole country in that church.
Wow. All right. So what's it like living in a Muslim nation where you've got 2,000 or 3,000 believers out of 33 million people?
Well, it's very different. It's you're a minority instead of a majority. You know, here in North Carolina, if you're a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, you're a majority. If you're a Muslim that comes to Charlotte, you're in the minority. Well, I switched places mm-hmm. with the Muslim in Charlotte, so I can relate a lot to these people many times.
And in Morocco, there's a common hat, the fez, the red hat. Do you know the origins of that?
Yes, yes. The fez hat, typically it was dipped in the blood of the Christians during the Crusades.
All right. So is that something that they're still conscious of, the idea of the Crusades or battle with Christianity?
Oh, yeah. It's part of their history. It's taught in school.
All right. So does that mean they're after your blood?
Not necessarily. Most Moroccans know about as much about the Quran and about what true Islam teaches as most evangelical Christians know about the Bible and what New Testament Christianity teaches.
All right, so how did they relate to you then? They knew that you were a Christian.
Yes.
Obviously, you don't put up a sign saying, I am a missionary out to convert you.
Exactly.
How did they relate to you then?
They related to me as a foreigner in their country and as someone who came in who was a very nice moral person. I remember having one Moroccan come to me and say, you don't smoke, you don't drink, you're a better Muslim than I am.
All right. Well, so they value morality?
Oh, very much so.
And how do they look at America?
They look at America as politically corrupt, but they love the American people because we're good-natured people, we're creative, we're successful in many instances.
Do they think of America as a Christian nation?
They do think of America as a Christian nation, even though we are no longer.
All right. So our pornography, our rampant social problems, drug abuse, all the trashy movies, they just associate that with Christianity?
They associate that, sad to say, with Christianity.
All right. So you're there with your family. Arabic's not an easy language to learn, as I know, having studied classical Arabic for 3 years. So you're starting to learn the language, share the gospel. Did you have breakthroughs? How hard is it to share the gospel with Muslims?
Not hard. Not hard at all. Because we have many things in common with a Muslim. Their prophets are Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. So we have five prophets in common.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the stories in the Quran are also in the Bible. So, and most good Muslims are very good moral people who really want to go to heaven when they die.
But they have no assurance through Islam.
They have no assurance through Islam. They can live and follow all the rules of Islam and die and still not be assured of salvation.
All right, so you share the gospel with them. I want to ask a few more questions about that, but what would happen to one of them if they truly came to faith in Jesus? What would the implications be for them?
Well, many implications. Number one, they would probably lose their job if they had one. Number two, if they were married, their wife would probably leave them unless she got saved too,
mm-hmm.
and take the kids. Their family would ostracize them, and in some instances, their family would kill them. And that would be okay, and they would not be prosecuted by the government.
Right, and in a more radically Islamic nation, killing them would just be fine, acceptable.
Exactly.
All right, so you've got all these obstacles now. You're, even if they like you, you're still a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe in Christianity. They associate American Christianity with trashy living. There's a high price to pay if they come to faith. Did you see any success, any results?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We saw some Muslims come to faith in Christ. We saw the Moroccan Underground Church, which is a whole nother conversation. Many of those individuals come to a fuller understanding of the power of God, mm-hmm. deliverance, casting out demons, praying for the sick, seeing the sick healed.
Wait, there's still demons around today?
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a quick word to my friends who don't believe in the power of the Spirit for today. And you know, as a listener, we have harmony on a lot of issues. And if you differ with me on these things, that's just fine. But I just have a question. Where do all the demons go? And there are a lot of demons in biblical times. Where did they all go? And if they're still around, don't we have power over them in Jesus' name? And shouldn't we be able to set captives free in Jesus' name? So you actually saw this lived out. Give me some examples.
Exactly. When I first came to Morocco, there were a number of missionaries working there. Most of them, great people, love Jesus, mainline evangelical, Baptist, Presbyterian, what have you.
Hardworking, sacrificial, godly people.
But they've reproduced in the Moroccan church what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And part of their paradigm is not the power of the Spirit. Part of their paradigm has not been in their Christian walk to see the lame walk and the blind see and the deaf hear and demons come out of people, which is New Testament Christianity, which is what we were taught in school and through the revival,
mm-hmm.
and even before. So when I came into Morocco, that's what was in my spiritual DNA, seeing the power of God manifested on the earth. And so I start talking about these things to the Western church and the Moroccan church, and they look at me like I've got two heads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, who is this guy and what's he talking about? Well, the Moroccan church looked in the Bible and said, this is in the Bible. Please come to our meetings and tell us more.
Got it.
And many of them started operating in seeing that in their own personal lives and in their underground house churches.
And think of this. Rather than making this into a doctrinal issue, let's think of it practically. Here's a sick Muslim. Person's dying. The family is inconsolable. And they have no hope in prayer to see an answer. You tell them Jesus has risen from the dead,
mm-hmm.
he's alive, and he's compassionate, and he healed the sick on the earth, and he still heals today, and you pray in the name of Jesus, what happens to that family?
The family's transformed. The family knows that there is something out there that Islam does not have the answer to. And, you know, my friends, when you're in a meeting somewhere or in someone's house and someone falls down to the ground and starts writhing around like a snake, it's not the time to call a psychiatrist and do psychotherapy on the person.
So you're talking about real demon power.
Exactly. It's not a time to shove some Prozac in their mouth and medicate. It's time to call on the name of the Lord, Because what does the word say? All who call upon the name of the Lord will be delivered.
And every knee has to bow to the name of Jesus. And so these are you just talking theory, or did you actually see this?
I actually saw this many times. I've seen it many times in many countries. Almost every country I go to, I see people who are demonized.
Yeah, and friends, you've often encountered the power of Satan. You've seen him destroy lives, and we know how Jesus sets the captives free. When he does it in the Muslim world, that's a principal way that Muslims come to faith. All right, Tim, we come back. I want to talk about your trip to Sierra Leone. Obviously, you want to get back into some of these countries as God opens the doors, some you're not able to get back into. But I want to talk about your recent trip to Sierra Leone, and then let's talk about the streets of America as well. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Tim Austin, who has served in the nation of Morocco and still active in ministry to Muslims as well as ministry here in the States. And this is just the beginning of our Missions Emphasis Week. I've just seen our next guest come in the studio, missionaries for a dozen plus years to Mexico. We'll hear from a father and daughter. But Tim, you were sharing right before the show what happened in Sierra Leone. And obviously, it's a long story, but the short version is still mind-boggling. This is an African country, about 60% Muslim, but English-speaking.
That's right.
When were you over there?
I was over there about 2 years ago.
All right. What happened?
Well, it was in a very dark period in my life, and a friend of mine paid my way to go and told me that he had prayed, and he really felt like I should go. So I went. And stuck me in a pastor's house that I'd never met before. And the guy, as soon as I got there, I asked him, what do you want me to do? I'm not here on vacation. I'm here to build the kingdom. So what do you want me to do? He said, well, I have six Bible school students that I'm training to be village pastors. I want you to teach them. He said, and I said, what do you want me to teach them? And he said, whatever you want. And I said, well, can I teach in the morning and go out and do what I teach about in the afternoon? And he said, sure. So one morning I taught on healing, and then in the afternoon we went out and we started praying for people for healing. We were going house to house asking, is there anyone sick? One little Muslim girl came to the street and said, would you come in and pray for my father? He just went blind. So I said, sure. So I came in, sat with the man, said, you're a Muslim? He said, yes. I said, can I pray for you in Jesus' name? He said, yes. So I put my hand over his eyes, I pray. Take my hand away. He looks around, says, I can see now. That's the first time I've seen that before in my life. I was excited.
Yeah.
The Sierra Leoneans weren't excited. They've seen that before.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty common for them.
Wow.
Another day, we were on our way to this very dark neighborhood that was filled with a lot of spiritual darkness, drug addiction, prostitution, a lot of homosexuality in this particular neighborhood of Freetown, Sierra Leone. And we were walking there just to pray in that area, and I get about three steps past a group of Muslim guys sitting on an old car with no wheels, and one of them shouts at me. He says, hey, white man. And I turned around and said, what? And he said, Jesus wouldn't walk past me. He'd stop and talk to me. And I said, okay. So I turned around and I said, my name's Tim. I'm from America. Who are you? He said, my name's Mohammed. I said, what do you do here in Freetown, Mohammed? And he said, well, I lead a group of people who we are involved in drugs and prostitution, and sometimes we rob people. And I said, are you going to rob me, Mohammed? He said, no. I like what you're doing. And I said, well, how do you feel about what you do? And he said, well, I'm worried that I might not make it into paradise when I die. And I said, you're not going to make it into paradise. You're going to go to hell and burn like a French fry.
Mm.
And he didn't like that. And he said, well, I don't want to go to hell. I want to go to heaven when I die. And I said, well, there's only one way for you, my friend. You've done a lot of bad things. You need forgiveness, and you need Jesus, and he's the only way you're going to get into heaven. He's the only way any of us are going to get into heaven.
So what happens?
So the guy gets saved. He takes me by the hand, leads me to this dark neighborhood that the church hasn't been able to penetrate in Sierra Leone. He starts grabbing people by their hands, pulling people out of their houses and saying, come here, these men need to pray for you.
So you're talking about drug addicts,
yeah.
prostitutes?
Yeah.
He starts pulling them out.
Yeah.
So this is what happens to a Muslim when he encounters Jesus.
Exactly.
Wow. And what, Tim, what happened with, you'd mentioned a story where the Muslims wanted to tear a mosque down after?
Yes. The Bible college students that I was teaching to go out and be village pastors, this pastor released them to go out into the villages. One went to a predominantly Muslim village and started preaching Jesus. The whole village gets saved. They go to the village elders.
And just to explain this, in that kind of culture, it's much more like the biblical culture.
Yes.
Where you have tribal leaders.
Yes.
And if a tribal leader turns a certain direction, the whole tribe can turn.
The whole village.
Right. So this is not uncommon.
No.
That's why when you read in the New Testament about villages turning to the Lord, and it makes more sense in that cultural context.
Exactly. So the whole village accepted Christ. They go as collectively to the village elders and say, can we tear down the mosque and build a church? And so the village elders said yes. So they did. And I have pictures on my computer of the new church that was built where the mosque was standing. And in many countries, that would cause major pandemonium.
You know, I remember getting that report from the colleague that had sent you over there. And so you were directly involved in this.
I was directly involved in that. The Lord gave me a part of that.
Wow.
Graciously.
And Tim, we're real short on time, and we've got just an amazing roster of folks to hear from this week. You right now are based in the States and traveling out, and mm-hmm. again, looking for some doors to open at the right time to get back into some of these Muslim countries. But you just go out in the streets with evangelistic teams where there are no Muslims around,
right,
and preach the gospel. Do you actually see God moving and setting people free here in the streets of America?
Absolutely. On the streets in America, we see people get healed on a regular basis. We see people get delivered on a regular basis from addiction, from depression. Not long ago, I was walking down the street, saw a guy sitting on the curb, walked up to him and said, hey, I'm out here praying for folks. Do you need prayer for anything? And the guy starts bawling.
Mm-hmm.
He was sitting there, had ran out of money, had never spent a night on the street, had said, I was just sitting here thinking, if God doesn't do something or send someone, I'm going to stand up and walk out in front of a truck and kill myself.
Really? So if you didn't go, just put the if there. I know some people believe God's sovereign and orchestrated. Let's just put the if there. He might be lost.
He
might be dead and lost. So we have to go. And Tim, 30 seconds, you were with us in our ministry school for 2 years. How did that play into you getting such a passion for the lost and a belief in God's power?
Well, the atmosphere rubbed off on me. You, whatever atmosphere you're in, believers, it's going to rub off on you. The atmosphere was revival. The atmosphere was the power of God. The atmosphere was the fire of God. And when I went on my first mission trip, it wrecked me. And when I saw what God did through me on a mission trip overseas, when I saw the lame walk and the deaf hear and the blind see and demons come out of people overseas, it started happening more and more here, and that changed my life forever.
Awesome. Hey, friends, listen, every dollar that comes in to support the Line of Fire, the first fruits of that we put towards our missionaries around the world. I'm looking at a list of missionaries we support, some of them substantially. In India, in the Middle East, in the Philippines, Tanzania, other countries. And you'll hear from someone later today. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire to get all 2 hours of our conversations with missionaries. And we'll be doing this for several days this week. But as you support us, we're enabled to continue broadcasting, lighting the fire in many, many hearts, and supporting our missionaries around the world. So I'm asking you to send a missions gift to the Line of Fire this week. And as our token of appreciation, first time I've ever done this, we have a CD that we recorded live at our School of Ministry a little over 10 years ago, called By Life or By Death. Songs really from our heart, powerful, life-changing. We'll send that to you, our music CD, for your gift of any size. So call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. So a generous missions gift into the Line of Fire this week. So together we can make a difference around the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we've been in Morocco and Sierra Leone. We are on our way to Mexico in our very first Missions Emphasis Week here on The Line of Fire. If you missed the beginning of the broadcast, I wanted to make plain that this is not just another radio broadcast. This is a voice of a worldwide movement, a worldwide gospel movement that we share in together with our Fire family, with our grads serving around the world. And this is not just some short-term, hey, we had a great experience and we're out of here. We're talking about people who've given their lives for countries and are sowing for years and years and years. And as you hear this, be encouraged in your own heart. And perhaps the Lord might be calling some of you to leave America and serve in other countries, at the very least, to be a witness where you are. I'm thrilled to have with us some of the Pricer family, Andy and his wife, Karen. How long have you been serving in Mexico now?
We've been there 13 years this past August.
Wow, 13 years. Why don't you just greet our Spanish-speaking listeners in Spanish?
Muy bien. Pues Dios te bendiga. Soy Andrés. Tengo conmigo mi hija, Brittany. Ya tenemos 13 años en México y aquí estamos aquí en la conferencia de misiones para levantar fondos para bendecir las naciones.
All right. I picked up some of that, but not all. All right. So Andy, you've been there 13 years in Mexico. How many kids do you have?
I have three, and actually, it's not my wife. This is my daughter.
Yes, I know. I know that. No, I'm fully aware of that. I know Karen well, and okay. I've watched Brittany grow up. So, Brittany, how old are you now?
I'm 20.
No, you got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding.
You're 20. Wow. I know. Everybody else grows up, and you forget that people you haven't seen. All right, 20 years old. Let me ask you this first, Brittany. You've lived now most of your life on the mission field.
Yes.
You haven't had a lot of the comforts of America. Some of the places you lived haven't been so easy. How is it growing up on the mission field?
That's actually kind of a funny question for me because it seems completely normal to have to go to the bathroom in a field or, you know, the things that people think are strange that they have to do on mission trips, I think is completely normal. So, it's different now that I've actually been living in California 2 years now. And now I'm realizing, oh, these experiences in Mexico that I thought were completely normal are a little bit different. So
how has it shaped your own life in terms of priorities, vision?
It's giving me a completely different vision compared to other people my age. Like, I have a completely different worldview. I love different cultures. I love traveling. I love people. And I think growing up in the mission field really helped with that.
Wow. All right. Amazing. I got a ton of questions. And it's great to see you growing in the Lord in every way. Andy, what years did you come to our school in Pensacola?
We were there. I moved there in August of 97, and I graduated in May of 99. And by August of 99, we were in Mexico.
Wow, amazing. And we just got a minute now before the break, but how did you and Karen get the calling to go to Mexico and really leave everything behind?
Wow, in 1 minute. Let's see. God actually spoke to Karen audibly. She knew my heart to go to missions, and the Lord had spoke to me years before. Spent some time with YWAM Youth with a Mission on their missionary ship, and I wanted to go to Mexico. Karen told me to leave it on the altar, let it die. She was sick of hearing of it, and the Lord spoke to her very clearly in the room one day. Says, Karen, will you go for me? It wasn't a command. It wasn't a you have to. It's a will you go? And she began to cry and weep and says, yes, 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 I'm ready to lay it down. So she knew in her story, she knew she could be a submissive wife and go, but she really felt that if she had the call as well, that when things were tough, things were difficult, that she only had the Lord she had to discuss that with and not put the blame on me. Thank you, Jesus, for that one.
Yeah, wow. So, really, that's absolutely right. If you don't know that you know,
that's right.
In the midst of the hardship and the challenge and the lack of funds and some opposition, it can be challenging. All right, we come back. Let's talk about the adventures being a missionary in Mexico. And a lot of folks might not know how raw and difficult and challenging a lot of places in Mexico are. All right, we'll be back with Andy Pricer, his daughter Brittany, from Mexico, live right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we are absolutely serious about a Jesus revolution. Not the way the world fights, not anger, hatred, guns, knives, intimidation. No, but Jesus radically changing us, and we go and change our world. And the Great Commission is always near and dear to the heart of God. Our whole FIRE community revolves around being a missions base. Every year, our missionaries come in from different parts of the world. We're constantly raising funds for missionaries, trying to raise up more support for them, sharing these testimonies with our current students to put a vision in front of them of going to the nations. And our guests now, Andy Pricer, his daughter Brittany, they've served now in Mexico for 13 years. So, yes, so Andy, how old were you when you went over to Mexico?
Let's see, 44, 31.
31 years old. All right. And Brittany, you were seven.
I was seven. Yeah.
Seven. Okay. Paint a picture of some of the places you've been in Mexico in terms of lifestyle, in terms of challenges. We hear a lot now about the violence going on with all the drug cartels. Are you around any of this stuff?
We are around some of it, but Mexico itself is really a beautiful country. A lot of people see it as cactuses and deserts and mountainous, and it is some of that. But as you get higher into some of the mountains, you have the piney woods and the oak trees and the ferns, the avocado orchards, the beautiful cane valleys. It really is a beautiful, beautiful country. We've had the opportunity of living literally all over Mexico, from the mountains of Oaxaca. We're in the big city of Guadalajara, 5 to 10 million people now. So we really had the opportunity to see lots of Mexico. A lot of Mexicans joke with me, say, well, you know more of my country than I do, and I think I do. We've been over to the coast in Baja and seen the beaches there, and it just, we love the culture, love the people. We've been in dangers, in and out of danger, death threats against us, just different things, just as we go, which a lot of people ask about the current danger now, and I tell them, you know, we'd be smart. There's some inner cities here in the States that I'm not going to go into. You know, the Lord gave us a brain. Let's use those things, and the rest we just count as faith, and we walk in just, you know, the assurance that He's going to protect us and guard us and keep us. But we do see a few dangers, and we avoid those as we can and move on with faith.
All right. Mexico is primarily a Catholic nation.
Yes, sir.
So why go there as a missionary if they already know about Jesus?
Very good question. The dominant religion there is Catholicism. It's a real mixture of, especially more you get into the mountains, of a paganistic belief. There's the word's called a Cristo paganism. I can take you to some Indian villages where they still practice animal sacrifices. They worship the sun god, the moon god, and have some really, really strange doctrines. Some of the Catholic priests, so to speak, are the actual ones that will cast spells on you. We've had our churches burned down. We've been stoned, pelted with rocks in the name of Maria. And we know that's not the true belief of the Catholic faith by any means, by any stretch of the truth.
So you're saying that folks there with this mixed up Catholicism, it's maybe militant in certain ways, but then mixed with paganism, folk religion. They've actually burned down some of your church buildings?
We've had a church burned down and death threats against us and have been stoned by those same people.
Wow. Have any of them come to faith?
What I do with the Catholic faith, when I encounter a Catholic believer that is really strong in his ways, my biggest thing for them is, and I've been... people have told me that this is what I do there, is I'm there to convert Catholics, and I'm not by any sense of the word. I'm there to encourage people to find a stronger belief in Jesus. So I really encourage them to grab the Bible for themselves. Don't have just a priest explain to you what's in the word. Find it for yourself. Have a relationship with God. And we have seen some Catholics come around to the truth of not what I'm teaching, but just of the truth of who God is personally.
All right. And tell me some of the breakthroughs you've had. There are other places that really know very little about Jesus, I imagine, or what they know is so twisted. So tell me some of your favorite stories of how God's broken through. 13 years, man, and you're not planning on getting out anytime soon, are you?
No. I'm what we call a lifer until the Lord changes that. We've had some real breakthroughs in many areas. One of our favorite things to do, of course, is to be invited to a local church, maybe one that is just a little cold or very religious or have some other strong doctrinal beliefs in there, and they just don't believe in more of God in a personal way. So we'll do what we call like a Firestorm Weekend type of thing. We'll come on a a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, where no one wants to clap, no one wants to be excited. There's just not the joy of the Lord present that we like to feel. And usually by Sunday night, things are really exploding. There's salvations. Even during worship time, we have people getting saved without even giving the word yet. It's just the presence of heaven that's there, and people are being touched and changed and delivered.
So in these Protestant churches that are dead, you've got unconverted people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And do you ever go out into some of the Mexican Indian places or things like that? Some of the areas that maybe are more untouched.
All the time. My heart really is still in the mountains. We live right outside Guadalajara, like I said, 5 to 10 million people. But we make visits to the Huicho Indians, just about 200 miles away, but it takes almost 8 to 10 hours to get there. Most of it's off-road. The Pueblo Indians are about 4 hours away, some of my favorite Indian groups to see. We spent 3 years in the mountains of Oaxaca. We had a Mixteco Bible school, of which we still have a fruit from that. We have a Mixteco young man who spent time in the Philippines. He's in Canada now evangelizing for the gospel, part of our fruit of rising up, sending him to the nations. So we love reaching out to the indigenous. In the city itself of Guadalajara is a melting pot of Huicholes. Many people don't know this, but Mexico has 290 plus different dialects in their country, and many of those are still considered unreached.
So how do these indigenous people live when you go out in the mountains? What's their lifestyle like?
Many of them are very simple. Of course, with the construction of roads and what have you, the towns that are nearby, many are traveling and moving out. The Spanish is getting into them. Many of the young people don't speak their Spanish. They still speak their dialect, and many of the olders. But with this education and schools reaching in and the availability of travel, more moving around. But there's still some very primitive villages out there that have nothing but a small cornfield and their milk cow, and that's it.
Amazing. All right, so Brittany, you go over there. You've got two siblings. How old are they?
I have a 17-year-old brother and a 16-year-old sister.
Okay, so you're the big sister.
I'm the big sister. All right. I don't look like it. I'm the shortest, but...
all right, but you... Yeah, I'm still amazed. 20 years old, we're just chatting during the break here because I remember when these folks went out on the field, and then we see you maybe every few years mm-hmm. when you're in for a conference, and we're all amazed to see the families. Sometimes I can't figure out who's who. I know the parents can't figure out who the kids are as you've grown up. So was this a family endeavor, or was this just something your mom and dad did and you kind of went along for the ride?
It was very much a family endeavor. I remember, well, like I said, I was there when I was 7 years old on the mission field, and I can't remember a single time when my parents would go up and minister without the kids. When there was prayer time, when there was any kind of ministry time, or I remember giving testimonies to a group of a few dozen Indians when I was eight or nine years old.
Really?
And so we were always very heavily involved in ministry. And I'm also a part of the worship team. My mom travels around and does a lot of worship. So I've been doing ministry full time like my mom and dad since I was seven. So
all right. So have you been able to reach kids in Mexico when they see you full of Jesus and talking about the Lord and worshiping the Lord, not just through your parents' faith, but directly? What does that do for them?
I've heard a lot of testimonies of people who have seen me and my brother and sister and been like, wow, I've never seen a family do ministry. I've only seen the dad, sometimes the mom. And I think that's a big testimony of how God can use little kids, because there's nothing we can't do that our parents can't do. We're out there, you know, praying for the sick too. So yeah, we'll oftentimes have kids come up and lay hands on people with us. And it's really powerful to see their face change when they see that they can also be used by God.
Mm. Now, obviously, with years comes wisdom and seniority and authority, and there are things you can do when you're 30 you can't do when you're 20. There are things you can do when you're 50 you can't do when you're 30. We understand that. But in terms of being a vessel used by God to testify, to pray in faith, to lift up Jesus, why not? I mean, it's not our flesh that's doing it. So, Brittany, take a minute and talk to young people in America, college age, older high school, folks getting on with their career, and give them a perspective that there might be more than iPads and the American dream.
Oh, I do love the iPads. No, just get the Bible app and you're fine. No, I'm kidding. Well, I would just say to young people that it's all about a relationship with you and Jesus, and that should be your first priority. I just heard something recently that... you will think about yourself how the most important person in your life thinks about you. So if we keep God as the most important person in our life, then we'll begin to think how he thinks about us. So if he just really needs to be number one and all these other things, salvations will start happening, healings will start happening, and stuff will follow you wherever you go as long as you keep God number one. So that's really what I would suggest to do.
And do you find that on a certain level it's easier to serve God in a place like Mexico on the mission field than in America just because of the distractions?
I would say it is a bit easier. But it could be just because our family was full-time missionary family.
Right.
And here, you know, you have your separate jobs. You're in high school. I was homeschooled, so I'm sure high school is a bit difficult. But like I said, as long as you're keeping God first, I think all of those other things will fall away and it'll be easy to do.
Absolutely. Well said. All right, more with Andy Price and his daughter Brittany. We come back. Oh, I'm going to play a clip of a pretty radical prayer time we had some years ago with our student body.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let me give you a little more feel of what we mean by Jesus Revolution. We have a live CD. We've not offered this for years, and I just thought it's going to be appropriate this week as we interview our missionaries from around the world. We've talked to a missionary from Morocco, talking to missionaries now in Mexico. Next hour, you'll hear from missionaries in England and Iraq. All grads, every one of them, grads from our ministry school or their families with them. And when Fire School of Ministry began to preach and teach on some of the themes of Jesus Revolution, we recorded a live CD. And again, for us, this is who we are, Jesus changing us, and we go and change the world. And this is one of the cuts on the CD. I'll tell you in a moment how you can get it for yourself. This is one of the cuts where I call the students up to join me on the platform together, and we cry out to God. So let your hearts be stirred.
If your hearts are burning tonight to change this generation, if your hearts are burning to see a Jesus revolution break out, I want a few of you to run up here and join me on this platform. We're going to cry out to God together. Jesus. Great God. Mighty One. We're here to give notice to the devil, to the powers of darkness, that enough is enough.
That's right.
For too long, the world has been changing the church, and we declare it is time for the church to go out and change the world. Living God, it is time for you to rise up in power and shake everything that can be shaken, that only your unshakable kingdom may remain. Lord, send us out to overthrow the status quo. Send us out to set the captives free. Send us out with a message of mercy and compassion and a dying and oppressed world. Lord, the world has had its share of fleshly demonic revolutions, of sinful counterculture revolutions. We declare tonight, it is time for a holy Jesus revolution. A holy grassroots counterculture revolution that'll take back the moral ground that was stolen out from under our feet. We declare war on dead religion. We declare war on the fear of man. We declare war on materialism and greed and sensuality and love of this world and addiction to sports and entertainment and fashion. We say it's time to be addicted to the love of God and the work of God. Father, we declare tonight that we hold nothing back from you. We ask you, living God, to hold nothing back from us. Send us out. Touch us so we can touch a dying world. We lift our voices now and we cry out for revolution. We cry out for revolution now. We cry out for revolution now. We cry out for revolution now. Revolution.
All right. That's our heart, friends. Not just emotion, not just hype, but seeing people going out and doing it, giving their life for lost and dying world. Andy, you've been on the field now 13 years. It's your intention to give yourself to the people of Mexico until the Lord says something else. Do you think you're specially equipped to do this? Do you think you're a special, unusual kind of guy, or can God use anybody? Talk to our listeners.
Just the opposite. There's not a whole lot special about me other than just the presence of the Lord on me. A lot of mistakes I make in Spanish, my bloopers I have, I make in English too. I start talking too fast, I get nervous, you shake, you do all this. I told a congregation one time to hate their pastor rather than to embrace their pastor.
So it was a blooper.
It was a blooper, yeah. We're going to have a lot of blooper reels in heaven when I get to see these things. But they understand the heart and they move anyway. It's about being a carrier of his presence. And really, that's our goal in Mexico is to allow people to be lovers of God and just the passion that we have for a relationship with God himself, we want to just bring that to people too. So the love covers a lot of offenses, the verse, that's my summary of it. That's so true. People know we're about relationship and we love them. We'll eat their food with them. We'll die with them, and they know that. And so they look past my bloopers. They look past my Spanish, look back past my inabilities to do different things because I'm a lover of God. So
anybody with a willing heart can make a difference.
I think that's what Jesus is looking for, someone that just says, okay, I'll do it, because that faith based in, hey, he can take care of me if I really just say yes, it just happens. It's true.
Awesome. And Brittany, last minute here, as you've been back in the States in school for 2 years in California, do the same things that work in Mexico and bear fruit in Mexico work and bear fruit here in America?
Definitely. Mexicans and Americans are quite different people, but it's the same God, it's the same Holy Spirit working in us, it's the same kind of stuff, it's the same Bible. And you just go out with the love of God, and you find that love encounter with God. You can ask him right now, say, God, I need a love encounter with you, and that marks you, and that's what marked my mom and dad at the Bronze Revival. It marked me at school. I can remember specific times when God marked me, and I'm never the same again. So you need that encounter with God so that you can go out and make the same kind of impact. Mexico, America, it doesn't matter where you are.
Awesome. And I'm smiling and full of pride in the Lord just to see how God's used your family and how you've been faithful on the field these many years and the great example, and to watch a woman of God grow up in front of me. Friends, if you want to find out more about what the Pricer family is doing in Mexico, find out more about any of our missionaries, go to fire-international.org. We're not just talking about it here. I'll say it again, this is not just another radio broadcast, this is the voice of a worldwide gospel movement, and we're out doing it, our folks are doing it, our family, every moment of every day with time zones around the world, someone's sharing the gospel, one of our grads, someone's making a difference, and you can be part of that. I want to encourage you to sow generously into the work this week. You're helping us help our missionaries around the world. You're helping us make a difference in many nations. Many are so consumed, we get so caught up with the things of this world, the needs of this world. Christmas is going to be soon, spending all kinds of money we don't have. Sow into missions. Stand with me today. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My gift to you, for your gift of any size, my thank you gift will be that CD. You just heard a clip from it, By Life or By Death, Songs of the Revolution from Fire School of Ministry. That'll be my thank you gift. So generously today, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown. Just click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, Jesus said almost 2,000 years ago, the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to thrust forth laborers into his harvest. He's saying to many today, what about you? Will you go? The Line of Fire is not just another radio broadcast. It is the voice of a worldwide gospel movement. You're about to hear from our missionaries from around the world.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I feel kind of like a kid in a candy shop today, better description of a grandparent showing off pictures of their grandkids, just kind of a joy and pride I've had as we've had an hour now of talking to grads from our ministry school who are serving in countries like Mexico or Morocco. We're about to hear from a Brit serving in England, and then later in the broadcast from someone from the island of Malta. You know where that is? Serving in Iraq, Kurdistan. These are all grads from our ministry school, which is why I said at the beginning of the broadcast, this is not just another radio program. This is the voice of a worldwide gospel movement. We are not just here to talk. We are here to do. It's been our history as long as we've been together. It's fire to reach the nations, to touch America, to see revival, to see Jesus' revolution, which for us simply means Jesus changes us, and by his God-given methods, we go and change the world. I'm not giving out the phone number. Well, I'll do it now, 866-34-TRUTH. I may take some calls, but for the most part, I'm just enjoying every second with our missionaries. Whatever you missed from the broadcast, just go to the website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you can listen to the entire 2 hours. And we'll be talking with missionaries most days this week, so you don't want to miss a single broadcast. It's my joy now to welcome to the Line of Fire Philip Howell. Philip, I think you speak English the way we used to. Is that correct?
I don't know. I guess so.
All right. Phil, you and your wife, Emma, how long have you been married?
18 years.
18 years. How many kids do you have?
We've got 3 kids, Anna, Judah, and Nathaniel.
All right. And when did you come to our ministry school?
We came in the fall of 99.
Fall of 99. All right. So you were with us in Pensacola and, yep, and then with us at the beginning of Fire School of Ministry. How did that time impact you? You obviously came here, husband and wife together, with a sense of calling, made the investment of relocating from England to the States for those years. How did it impact you being in the school?
Well, we came with a touch from the revival we'd visited, but it totally changed our lives and our perspective on ministry, on the future, what God wanted to do with us. We'd been leading a successful youth group up till then, and yet knew there was more. And we came with hungry hearts, but God met those expectations so many, many times over. So we came with the view that, God, what do you want us to do? We're giving our lives to you afresh. Send us wherever you want. And within a week, God broke our hearts for the UK.
Interesting. And this is the kind of country where you can actually be a missionary within your own country now.
Absolutely. Yep.
So before we talk about where you are specifically and the type of unique outreach work that you're doing, we just got a few seconds before the break, but how Christian is England today?
That's a really difficult question. I think you know that. On one level, it's still got that great Christian, Judeo-Christian heritage. And yet, if you went to parts of the UK today, certain estates, you would think you were in the most uncivilized, barbaric nation on earth. So it's a real mix of both of those things.
And what about Islam?
Islam is increasing by numbers in migration. Even our own town, there's a new mosque being built, which is bigger. But I don't consider it a threat on one level, in the sense that if the gospel's going out, then that's all that we're concerned about.
Got it. All right, we come back. We're going to take you into a very interesting neighborhood in England and into a very interesting church where everybody there is either unsaved or on their way to getting saved or just saved. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our first missions emphasis week. It's during our 13th annual missions conference at FIRE, but it's our first ever time where we've been able to plan ahead enough to get enough of our missionaries as they're coming through town, get them live on the air with us. So thanks so much for joining us. I'm not planning on taking calls. If there's something urgent you felt needed to ask our guests, that's fine. 866-34-TRUTH. But I want to devote all this time to our missionaries. And friends, everyone that you're hearing from so far today and most of this week, they're all grads from our ministry school. They're part of our extended spiritual family. We're in regular contact with them, many of our folks working together with them in different parts of the world. And my guest now, Phil Howell, with his wife Emma, serving in their home country of England, but really as missionaries. And we've got some other grads there with you too.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got Greg and Debbie Nissen with their three kids, and hope to have Steve and Glenda Christner with their three children as well soon.
So Steve and Glenda are fire missionaries who were serving in Ukraine, doing amazing things, finally got basically kicked out of Ukraine because they're missionaries. They're not coming back to America. They're looking to join you there in England. All right. Emma's mom and dad, long-term pastors in the city of Crewe, England. Was that a door that was open to you, basically, to assume some type of leadership or ministry in an established church there?
Yeah. I was on the leadership team for about 2 years there, and we'd served in the youth. We were worship leaders. We led services. We preached. That was, quite an open door for a number of years, and we served there for about 8 years.
So you, in a sense, you could have had a, quote, ministry career. I don't mean that in the negative sense, but things established for you. You could have had that and done some good work there.
I mean, we were very happy there. There were no issues at all, but God intervened and shook us out of our kind of comfort zone, if you like. And we, about 3 years ago, we felt the Lord clearly speaking to us, a number of words from him through different people. And we just had to step out and plant a new work across the other side of the town.
All right. In your town, what percentage of the people would you say are genuine believers?
Probably around 2% as a maximum, I would say.
All right. So this is in England.
Yeah.
You know, America, our numbers are declining in certain ways in terms of people identifying as Protestants or Christians in general. And then the genuinely born-again population, you know, we boast these large 25, 30% numbers. But obviously, America would be very different if we were really living it out. But where you are, you're saying maybe 2%. A city like London, it's even less, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Larger percentages of mixed ethnic believers, but yeah, probably slightly less than that.
Got it. So this is cross-section of a lot of England today, which is really extraordinary. So what kind of people are you reaching out to? I mean, let's just talk real life. I don't want to use idioms, brass tacks. Do you use brass tacks? You talk brass tacks?
Yeah.
I remember in my first time preaching in England in 87, I didn't know if I could use idioms. And I said, does the rubber meet the road in England? They said, yes. Do the cows come home? But then other words don't mean the same, as I learned. Okay. So tell me the kind of people you're reaching there.
I think we're reaching people who have an idea about God, but really have never experienced the gospel. They've never heard the gospel. There's one guy, Pete, who found us. He was dropping his son off to play football. We meet in a school dining room.
Football meaning soccer.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Educating the Americans here. Go ahead.
He Googled us. He saw our banner outside, and he just came in. He's an ex-special forces. He's got tattoos all over himself. But, you know, he found the Lord very quickly, and has been such an amazing breath of fresh air. He soaks up everything we do. He loves meeting for worship. He's sharing his life with his friends. He's praying for his friends. And he's still in the pubs and the clubs where he used to be. But now he's put himself at a drink limit. And he's reaching out to lots of his really alcoholic friends.
Wow. All right. So your vision for growing church is not just transfer Christians, which is most of what we have in America. If my church grows, it's because people left your church. If my church declines, it's because they went to your church. I mean, that's pretty much what happens. But you're committed to not do that.
No. I mean, in fact, we had an agreement with the pastors around the town we spoke to them about our vision and said, if anybody wants to come and join us, then we really are going to send them back to you if they're coming from another church, and unless you're absolutely happy with it. So we're going out for people who know nothing about Jesus. We're starting to touch into a number of guys who are lonely. They're the people who frequent the pubs. They've got no friends, no family. They're alcoholics. They're desperate. They're lonely. And they're finding family. They're finding people who love them and care for them. And they're finding Jesus and the life that he brings.
Now, when you started your meetings, how did you get your first people in?
That's a good question. We had a core group of maybe 15, 9 adults and 6, and we started with an alpha course to begin with, which some of the listeners may be familiar with.
Yeah, fill us in. Many are, but many don't know the alpha course here in America.
It came out of a church called Holy Trinity Brompton in the 1980s, I believe, but it's really a non-threatening course about Jesus and about the foundations of Christianity. But what's great is it's focused around a meal. And so people get a free hot meal, they get a short talk, and then they get a chance to discuss and ask whatever questions they like. And it's estimated that about 9 million UK citizens have done this course.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so you started with that approach. You had 15 people. How many do you have now?
We have sort of probably regularly about 55. And many, many more than that. I mean, if we counted all those who've come, family, friends who've attended once or twice, it would be pushing 100 people.
All right. So on a given Sunday with your 55, give me like a picture of who's there. I mean, how many are believers? How many are just visiting or checking it out? Or
we've got a good core of real committed believers. Some have been one or two from other churches. Then we've got an Iranian family who bring their daughter, and we believe the mum's a believer now. Dad is still a bit uncertain. We've got a Polish family who are very Catholic background, and he is inching his way towards Jesus, but he comes every week. We've got a number of single men, and it's quite unusual in our church, I think, even in the UK, that we have a preponderance of men, not women.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys come, and actually some come for food. We have a shared meal every Sunday around somebody's house. We're starting to draw in a few young people now. One or two are coming from Christian homes, but without their parents. We have one or two students from the local university that we're starting to reach. And we're always surprised. People find us. People walk by and they just come in. And they weren't even intending to come to church that day.
And what do you do on the streets? What kind of street outreach? Or do you have a regular presence anywhere?
Yeah, we don't have buildings, so actually we see that as a blessing. Despite the weather, we rent a building, well, obviously.
And it gets cold and rainy in England.
Well, it's never not cold and rainy.
Got it.
But we do a very simple tea and coffee outreach in the town centre. We set up a little camping table. We take flasks of hot water. People love tea. They also like coffee in the UK, and we give it away free. And we've found that people come back. We get regulars. It's like their Costa Coffee, I guess, or their Starbucks, as you have over here. And they come back for the friendship, maybe to debate us, maybe because they're interested in what we're saying, or maybe just because they actually enjoy people being about. And there's usually about 6 people from church who are there taking part. So not just the missionaries that we have, but ordinary believers who want to share their faith.
And how often do you do this?
Once a week for a few hours. But we're seeing fruit from that. It's a non-threatening way of reaching people. And we heard somebody walk by the other day who wasn't part of us, but they looked around and whispered to someone, "That's for the needy people. That's for the needy people." And I actually think that's great. We're doing the right job. We're going after the poor. We're going after the needy. We're going after those who have no hope in this life.
All right, friends, I don't know if you could hear the tears in Phil's eyes, but Phil, the moment you started talking about that, the needy and the poor, you had to hold yourself together. You're still doing that right now. Share your heart for the needy and the poor. I mean, what's God put inside of you?
I guess in one sense, that's not my background. You know, my background is a comfortable family and, you know, good schools and parents who cared for us. But I guess God has put that into us, a heart for the disadvantaged, a heart for the marginalized, and for people who really society doesn't do them any favors. And it's messy. It's not always straightforward. But God has put a heart in us that we want to reach the poor. And we were talking with a mutual friend of ours, Steve Dunn in New Zealand, and he just continues to exhort us, don't forget the poor. And I think that is our heart, is to reach those who actually have great potential, but we'll only find that in Jesus.
Yeah, Phil, I'm moved by this, especially because it's not your background, and often we just gravitate to the way that we were raised, even when we love the Lord. Friends, that's the heart of God. That's the heart of God that's being shared with you. All right, back with more from England.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, you are getting to hear from England today on the Line of Fire. First-hand accounts, everyone speaking with today, grad from our ministry school or the child of a grad from our ministry school. Some have been on the field as long as 13 years. Touched, graduated, out on the field, never turned back. In the case of Phil, Hal, and his wife Emma, ready to go anywhere in the world, come from the UK to our school that was in Pensacola then, as in Concord, North Carolina now, and God sent them back to their own country with a tremendous burden. And Phil, I know that the last several years, the number one boy's name in England has been Muhammad, and Islam is growing. You mentioned a larger mosque going up in your city. I was kind of shocked my last time in London just to see the woman with burqas, you know, fully covered head to toe, walking down the streets. But yet you feel confident that as long as the gospel goes forward, everything will be just fine.
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, the media would like to bring a scaremongering and a certain perspective. But I feel that as a church, if we are reaching out, if we're loving people and we have Muslim friends that we're reaching out to in crew. They phone us up and they phone Greg and Debbie for lifts to the airport and different things. And I think if we're reaching out in love to them, then actually we're going to see people's lives transformed.
Now, you mentioned in good British English that dealing with the poor, the hurting, the marginalized is not always straightforward. In other words, it's a little messy. Tell me a story or two about some of the things you've encountered with folks that are just not normal church people.
Well, we have a guy called Jacko. We met on the streets for many weeks, and he's turned up at church a couple of times. And the second week he came in at the back, helped himself to a hot drink and some toast, as we let people do. And then he spotted the communion cups on a plate. And he has no idea about anything. And he just went up and started downing them one by one and had finished half of them off, about 20, before one of the ladies on the back row stopped him. And they were in hysterics for the rest of the meeting because he obviously thought they were spirits or wine or something else. But we have a lot of fun. These guys are great characters, but God is starting to really melt their hearts and to soften them, and they're beginning to open up. But it's good fun. It's good fun.
So that's the spirit you have. It's not like they're going to make a mess.
No.
Or dirty your lovely, pristine ministry.
No, I think We had an issue in the church as we have a Sunday lunch in people's homes, and there were a number of weeks when these guys started to come. And so we had to grapple with that with the church. We talked it through. How do we handle it? What's our attitude to be? And actually what is great about it is people just really recognized it was going to be a challenge, but they were willing to open their homes and their lives to these guys.
So to say, dirty, smelly people, someone that might even try to steal something from the house. And you've got families maybe with kids.
Yep.
And you're going to open your home and they're going to know where you live.
Absolutely.
And the decision was we open our homes.
We're doing it for Jesus, yeah.
Yeah. So you're willing to get your hands dirty.
Absolutely.
Now, what's happening in the city as far as pastors coming together?
Well, it's interesting. Over these last few years, there's a whole new group of pastors. Church leaders changed over the years. And I think God is just forging a real sense of unity, not in terms of just throwing aside our individual congregations, but actually how do we work together better to reach this town? How do we join together? How can we pray together? And that's starting with prayer, which is always the best thing, that leaders are meeting together to pray, that there's a prayer for crew that's happening. And it's just, I believe something exciting is ahead, because there is a real genuine sense of unity that is starting to grow and develop.
And Phil, you mentioned when you shared at our missions conference over the weekend here at FIRE that there's actually growth now in the church across denominations in England. I mean, it's kind of the opposite of what I've been hearing, because of moral decline and spiritual decline and even loss of religious rights and freedoms. You know, I document a lot of that when it comes to homosexual activism, and it seems to be a frontal assault on Christianity. There's talk now of redefining marriage, same-sex so-called marriage, and churches would have to perform ceremonies. So, I mean, you hear all that, but you say something else is going on.
I do. We heard it from the head of the Evangelical Alliance, which is across all evangelical churches of most persuasions. But actually, there is growth amongst every denomination, every stream, every church group is beginning to grow for the first time in decades and decades. And that's what we've experienced and what we've seen. But it was encouraging to hear that was nationwide. And so that's exciting. The church is still relatively small, but I believe that the church has come under pressure and is responding to that and really beginning to pray and to reach out. And there's an authenticity, I believe, about the church in the UK that perhaps there wasn't a few decades ago.
And we know, say, in the days before Wesley, that things were in a terrible state, morally and socially and spiritually, and God moved. Sometimes when you just rely on your heritage and the notion that we're Christian, you get complacent.
Yeah.
And it's in the midst of these struggles and pressures, things change. Hey, Phil, we've just got a minute or two before we're done, but because God called you back to your own country, and you're as much as a missionary as any missionary we have, as you serve and go for it on the front lines, talk to Americans who may not be called somewhere else, but they're called to where they live. Give a word of exhortation and encouragement.
Well, it's an easy one, really, is live your life fully for Jesus. Throw yourself into a local church. Get to know people. But you have a mission field right on your doorstep. My wife and I, we keep jobs. We have part-time jobs because we're in the communities that we're seeking to reach. And I would just encourage people, use your time and your gifts, use your job, your families, your homes to reach people and to, because I'm sure there's many lost people here as there are back in the UK.
Yes, there are. Awesome. And the fact that you're working jobs to be involved in the community and even to be able to sow into the ministry work, that's a great mission's heart as well. Friends, I want to encourage you to stand with us as we stand with our missionaries. I'm looking at a list of missionaries. These are grads from our ministry school that we're supporting, looking at those in India, in the Middle East, in the Philippines, in Tanzania, in other nations, as I look at the list here, in China and Japan and Iraq and other nations, as our workers are going out. As you stand with us, we stand with our missionaries all the more, and this broadcast continues to be a voice of a worldwide Jesus movement. I want to appeal to you. Christmas is coming. Everyone's going to be appealing with greed and commercialism. I want to appeal to you to sow your funds into something that's going to last forever and that will give you eternal treasure in heaven. And for your gift of any size, my thank you gift to you is our live CD of songs here from FIRE School of Ministry called By Life, By Death. In fact, we'll be playing a clip of it in the next half hour. So your gift of any size, I want to send you that music CD. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. Again, so generously, God will reward you generously. 1-800-278-9978. Or you can just go to our online bookstore and order there. God bless you. Together, friends, we are making a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
For 13 years, friends, we have been having a missions conference at Fire Church, Fire School of Ministry. This is our 13th annual missions conference. We're right in the midst of it. What makes it special is our missionaries are grads from our ministry school. Sometimes we brought in some others to work with us as well. But grads from our ministry school serving around the world, spiritual sons and daughters, co-workers, and they come back, they share what's going on, we help raise further support for them. And for the last hour and a half, we've been talking to missionaries who served in places like Morocco, serving in Mexico for 13 years, serving in England. And this last half hour, we will be talking with a spiritual son, one of our grads from the island of Malta, who is called by God to serve in Kurdistan in Iraq. So, friends, call a friend, have them tune in. You will be impacted. I want to repeat what I've said earlier in the day. This is not just another radio broadcast. This is the voice of a worldwide movement. We're out there doing it. I was in Jerusalem, broadcasting live from Jerusalem. We're on the front lines of Jewish ministry there. We're back in the States with our missionaries who are serving around the world. And we want you to share in this experience. So, Fabian, welcome to the Line of Fire. Just get a little closer to the mic there. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you.
All right, island of Malta. Where is that?
Mediterranean Sea. It's south of Italy.
South. And what's the population of Malta?
400,000.
400,000. And what's the national language?
Maltese.
Maltese. All right. You were in England as a cook, correct?
Correct.
How did God get hold of your life, and then how did he bring you over to our school, which was then in Pensacola?
Well, I was brought up in a Christian home in Malta, but I was not serving God. I was not on fire for God. I was not fully surrendered to him at that time. But when I was living in London, through a series of things, God started to capture my attention. There was more to life, what I was living for. I went to a healing crusade. Somebody came witnessing to me at a train station. My eyes started becoming open and more and more. And then you had come and preached in London, and when I heard a message and the testimonies of what was happening at the revival, and even the impact that was done to the church where you preached, it impacted me. It moved my heart in such a way that I wanted what I heard and what I experienced at that service.
So you left London, and yes. You came to Pensacola, Florida. What happened to you when you were in the school of ministry? Because at this point, you were serious, you're committed to the Lord. What happened to you when you were in our school?
I just, more than anything, I fell in love with Jesus. The fire came in my life, and true repentance took place. You know, as the conviction of sin was so strong, and just genuine surrender, falling in love with him, and that resulted in just a love for people, love for the lost, a love for the gospel. And I started going out with students on the streets, which I was a very shy person up to that point. And just the fire came, and I could not hold it in. I could not keep it to myself, and started going out to reach people, reach the lost. And from that there, you know, hospitals, prisons, and eventually different countries.
So your missions career, in a sense, then started where you were in Pensacola, just going on the streets,
yes,
and sharing what you had.
Exactly.
Since then, what countries have you ministered in?
It's been quite a few, but I've Cameroon. I've been to North Africa, Tunisia, Morocco, Libya, Lebanon, Egypt, Iraq, Europe. I've been to Vietnam.
Amazing.
Yeah, Haiti, Mexico, Nicaragua.
All right, but on that list, quite a few Muslim countries. We come back, want to talk about what God's laid in your heart to do as you've been ministering more and more to Muslim people with the gospel. Want to talk about where God is sending you. Friends, call a friend, have them tune in. You're about to hear some things that will stir your heart.
Fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, I just want to take a moment on this special missions emphasis week as we'll be talking to our different missionaries who are in town from different parts of the world. These are all grads from our ministry school or folks that we have gotten into close relationship with and are now sent out onto the mission field. But as you're listening, I want you to think about your own life. I want you to think about your own life and how God can use you where you are, or perhaps he's calling you out to be trained, equipped, and sent to the nations. And as you support us, all of you who give to this ministry, our torchbearers, our monthly supporters, you're helping us support people like Fabian out on the front lines, reaching the lost. I'm talking about going for the lost and reaching the lost. Fabian, God put that burden in your heart for the lost, and then he started to deepen the burden for Muslims. You're married, yes?
Yes.
Any kids?
Two kids.
Two kids. All right, so you're not just talking about going out on your own. You're talking about moving somewhere with a wife and children. Where is God calling you and your family to? And I mean, you're on your way there. It's right around the corner. Tell us about it.
It is is in the Kurdish part of Iraq. So it's in North Iraq.
Northern Iraq. So the Kurds, they've suffered a lot in Iraq.
Yes.
But they're Muslims.
They are Muslims.
Okay. How many churches are there? We can't mention where you're going specifically, but in general, there are a lot of churches, a lot of Christians there?
No. I just this year, they made a short video of the first Kurdish church in 1,400 years.
Wow.
So it's in like a new ground. The Kurds are pretty very unreached, and very little. When I asked, you know, in that whole region, they said pretty much of one solid Kurdish church, they know of one.
Wow. In a region of how many million of people, do you think?
Kurds, there's about 5 to 6 million Kurds in Iraq.
Okay, and handful of churches. Wow. Is there opposition there, difficulties? What are you going to face living there in Kurdistan?
You can't just openly preach the gospel. You can't be there as a missionary. Islam brings its own challenges, and also the fact that they're unreached, you know, has its own challenges. Islam opposes Christianity. You know, they have a goal to even convert us. So, you know, Islam has its, you know, there are groups in the Islamic community that they are violent and not the majority, of course. So there are, of course, obstacles that, you know, people are not so ready to receive the gospel. But they are looking for help. They have needs like everybody else has needs. They have physical problems. They have marriage problems. They have depression. They have the sin problem that everybody has. So we just, you know, focus on that, on reaching the person in the midst of, yes, Islam that can, people can, you know, they are told to not listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have that, of course, as a challenge.
So why not just have a successful career as an evangelist preaching in America? I mean, I've heard you preach. You're on fire. You've got a powerful message. You've prayed for the sick and seen the sick healed. You could do really well just having kind of a circuit of churches in America, take up some good offerings. You and your family could live comfortably. Why risk your life and give yourself to a place like this?
Because we love Jesus and we want to obey him. Jesus said, whatsoever you do with the little of these, you're doing it with me. And Jesus told us to go into all the world and preach the gospel of the kingdom to all nations. And then the end will come. And so it's a command. It's a command to go to all the world. And even Paul says, I made it my goal, my aim to go in places where Christ hasn't been preached. He says, I was following God's plan in the scriptures. That is God's plan, that those who haven't heard will see, will hear, will understand. So it's God's plan. So if I'm going to follow Jesus, I'm going to follow God's plan. And his plan is the gospel to the nations. Those who have not heard will hear.
All right. I mean, I'm with you. Amen. And I'm asking questions, knowing where your heart burns. when you've been in America, Fabian, have you found that the church in America has a strong burden for the lost, or do we seem somewhat self-centered?
I would say it's pretty self-centered.
Talk to us.
Yeah.
Talk to us straight.
Yeah. It's a lot of, unfortunately, yes, in the Christian American Christian church, everything is surrounded around me or I. What's going to help me? What's going to benefit me? Everything's about me, my time, you know, my needs, my wants, and all these things. But the gospel has nothing to do with me or I. Has everything to do with Jesus. So, yeah, people, we have to, I don't know better words to use, but we have to get over ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, die to self and realize, like, I'm here for Jesus. And, you know, words I heard you, you know, say many times that have impacted me, you know, I only have one life to live, and it's not about me. It is about Jesus, and that means to obey him, to do whatever it takes to please him and see his will come to pass. So, yeah, it's very challenging. Yeah, it has been in American church because people want to be fed. People want to be learned. They want a lot more information, a lot more teachings. Everything is really what it boils down to is self. It's for me. I want, I need, I desire this. But the closer we get to Jesus, we do become more missionary-minded, more His great commission becomes more real to us the closer we get to him. So I know that the answer, the solution to that is simply get closer to Jesus, because if we do, he's going to share his heart with us.
Mm. How does your wife feel about this move?
She is very excited. She was not always very excited.
And she's American.
She is American.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first time. I mean, I've been going to a few Muslim countries, and she was happy hearing about, you know, the testimonies. And when I went to Iraq the first time last year, she was a little bit shocked. But when we started talking about the possibility of moving there, you know, she had great concerns. You know, she knows, she sees also the news. And you know, when you mention Iraq, people, of course, has these, you know, certain thoughts that come to their minds, like bombs, you know. But in prayer, God really started to move on her heart that he is with us wherever we are. That it's you know, she follows Jesus. She has the heart for people, of course. But, you know, when Iraq came up, she had those certain concerns, what could happen. And so God started working in her heart. And then I decided to take her on a trip, on a short trip. And she came in the end of March, beginning of April. And when she got to see in person, she fell in love with the people.
Wow.
And she told me, I love this place. She says, I if it wasn't for the kids, I could have just stayed here right now. As you get to see the needs of the people, and the people are actually, when you have genuine love, they respond to that. You know, they're very relational. They want to come over. You know, we were visiting stores a couple of times. The shop owner didn't want to charge us money. He says, the first time in my store. Take it, and you just get to see the basically people are people. It's not this. That's why I'm very careful when I share people to stir them to go to unreached places in the Middle East. Yes, there are things that are at risk, of course, and there's bad things that can happen. But you know, Jesus is with us, and these are normal, also normal people that they respond to love, that they have needs, and is not as bad as really the enemy or the news want to picture to us. It's not, yeah, there's challenges, but we have God's grace with us. And when you get to see the people in person, you realize, man, yeah, there's things that we do give up. Yeah, it's very different, but they're people. And when you see the potential of what can be done, you're overwhelmed.
Wow, praise God. Yeah, and we need to see past those news clips. And yeah, pass exactly. The thought of everyone being a terrorist, which, of course, is not the case. And remember, these are that's people right. For whom Jesus died. I know we're focusing on Iraq and Kurdistan right now, but when you were in Vietnam ministering there, what did you find among the Christians there? Many have been persecuted for their faith. What type of commitment did you find there?
The people are, first, they're disciples. They're not churchgoers. They are disciples. They're followers of Jesus. They're fishers of men. And they risk their life to even have a church meeting. And so when they have a church meeting, it lasted all day long.
Mm.
And the first time I was going to do a house church, when I asked how long the meeting goes, it was going to start at 8:30 in the morning. They told me till about maybe 5 p.m. And because there's risk to come together. So when they do, they're going to spend hours. And they just sit there and just listen. And they actually do something about what they learn. I mean, they were even come and meet me at the hotel room before I go to the airport and kept asking me questions about what I had preached, because they want to make sure they remember what I had told them. And so just the hunger was for God and to fulfill His purpose was incredible.
Amazing. Friends, that's the gospel. That's being a disciple. That's spiritual reality around the world. We come back. I want to play a music clip on this very theme, by life, by death, and then more with Fabian.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire in this special Missions Emphasis Week, as I'm talking most days this week with our fire missionaries, grads from our ministry school who are making an impact for Jesus in a very serious way around the world, literally doing extraordinary things, and we support them. We help sow into the work that they do as you sow into us. The first fruits of what we get goes out to support our missionaries. And Fabian, the cost of the gospel, following Jesus at any cost, that's, in a sense, gospel 101, not just for the advanced disciples. We have a CD. We never played it on the air, or not for years, never offered it on the air. It's a live CD that we recorded a little over 10 years ago. And flying back from Israel, I thought, I want to make this available this week. And one of the songs is called By Life, By Death. It was written by the wife of one of our ministry team leaders. I just want you to hear the chorus, because it's foundational to the gospel.
By life, by death, we will serve the Lord. By life, by death, everything is yours. By life, by death, we embrace the call. We
Fabian, does that sound like fanaticism to you?
Not at all. That should be every one of us.
Talk to us about it.
Yes. When Jesus tells us to come and follow Him, you know, He doesn't add anything else to that. He said, come follow me. That means follow. We give Him 100%. We give Him everything. And, you know, when I learned that Jesus is Lord, and when the more I understood it, and I realized that, you know, I don't pick and choose, you know, what I want in my life and what I do. He is Lord. It means He owns me. My life does not belong to me. So that means that I want to know His will. And it's a joy. It's a joy to love Him. It's a joy to live for Him. There is no greater joy than doing His will. And I found, you know, I've been living like this, you know, for a few years now. And the real joy is being in His presence and doing His will. It gives us so much of satisfaction when we let go of everything to live for Him. Because just to have the nearness of God and to know that God's smile is over my life, no matter what the obstacles, He's always there. And you feel that love, and you feel even Him speaking to my heart that He's proud of me, that means more than anything to me. And so he wants everything. And, you know, I also want to encourage this. You know, yes, we have one life to live, and the time is getting short. The harvest time is actually getting shorter by the day.
Mm.
There's so many. Jesus sees everybody dies. We don't. He sees people die. Estimate maybe about 2 people per second die. He sees that all the time. And the closer we get to Him, that becomes more real to us. And we then And what's in his heart becomes what's in our heart. We realize, I've got to do something about this. I've got to do something to help people be turning to Jesus. And when we genuinely hunger to make a difference, he's going to share his heart. He's going to fill us with his presence. He's going to open doors that in the natural we cannot open it. Why? Because of our willingness to please him and do his will. And so that's what I encourage people. Spend time alone with Jesus. Ask him, show me your heart. Because, you know, because going to Iraq, people tell me, you're not afraid. You know, honestly, I'm not. But one thing that does scare me is what you have said and learned, Ravenhill. What does scare me is standing before God and see what I've missed, what I could have done and haven't done it. Mm. That scares me more than anything. I want to make sure that I am doing the will of God every day, and I'm doing it to the full, to the maximum, because I don't want to regret it when I stand before God. And the more, again, we stay in relationship and close to him, this stays a reality. And because if we get distance from him, again, the things of this life will start being a concern, and we don't want it to happen, because if it does, we won't be doing his will.
Yeah. And Fabian, you know, I know you well, and I know your heart for the Lord, and that this is not a religious burden you carry. This is devotion to Jesus. And Mike from Raleigh has a question. And Mike, I'm just going to keep you there listening just for time's sake. But Mike's question is certainly one, Fabian, that many callers and listeners would have, which is, what's the first step to go down becoming to go down the path of becoming a missionary? So let's just list a few practical steps. Obviously, first and foremost, you've just been emphasizing, get closer to the Lord, right? Spend quality time with him. How about just start to do outreach where you are? Is that important?
Very important. A missionary is somebody on a mission. So we're on a mission right where we live. And I've been doing this, you know, for years.
Right, wherever you are.
Right where I live. And then not only just where I live, and then other cities in the U.S., and it starts getting, you know, broader to further and further and further other places. So definitely make sure that you're a missionary where you are.
All right, so number one, first and foremost, get with the Lord, spend time with the Lord, get his heart, get to know the Lord better. Number two, find a mission where you are. Start to get involved. Look for ways to reach the lost on your job, in your neighborhood. Number three, what about going on a short-term missions trip?
I highly recommend that. Actually, I listed in ways for people to keep the fire burning is go on a trip, go on a short trip. A lot of what God did in my heart for missions and other cultures is just simply going on a short trip. And you start to see what God is doing in these places, the need, and he captures your heart. So going on short trips is definitely a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard testimony from a number of our missionaries that's where it all started. We try to get our folks out on a short-term missions trip while they're with us. It's just a part of their life in the school. Obviously, reading about missions, what God's doing, you keep that in front of you, the needs of the world, because we can think that what really matters is who's going to win the World Series, or how the stocks are doing, or who becomes president. Those things don't matter the way reaching a lost and dying world matters. And then last thing, and we're out of time, Mike, but by all means, be in touch with us, and we'll give you more guidelines. Get to a place where you can get trained and equipped. Fire School of Ministry is such a place. There are other fine places. Number one, quality time with Jesus. Really get to know him better. Number two, get on a mission where you are. Reach, go out for the lost. Number three, go on a short-term missions trip. And then number four, take a step to get trained and equipped. They're fine places. Take the step to do that. Hey, Fabian, we'll be praying for you as you step out with your family. We know there's going to be much lasting fruit. And friends, I want to encourage you so into this work. Help us raise up and send out more Fabians around the world. Help us support our workers on the field, and help us with this broadcast to touch the ends of the earth and all over America. Your gift of any size, my thank you gift to you, will be this live CD of songs from Fire School of Ministry that will stir your heart. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there is a consumer Christianity in America that produces consumers. We are not called to be consumers, but disciples. Are you among that company?